I'll apologize in advance. I have a little bit of, or not a little bit, a lot of a cold that doesn't want to go away, so I might need to take a few breaks here throughout my presentation. So I have no relevant financial relationships. I do have attribution language. What I'm going to present is a part of a story of a federal grant, the Communities Putting Prevention to Work grant, that the Cook County Department of Public Health and the Public Health Institute in Metropolitan Chicago received. So the views of the presentation are not necessarily those of CCDPH or PHIMC. For today, I really wanted to share one piece of what is a larger story, almost a decade-long story that we obviously won't have time to go through all of. But what I hope to leave you with is a framework that talks about how you marry vision with action and how you execute. And in this case, I'm talking about a large grant, but it really could be any major project or complex problem that you're working on. And so that's what I'm hoping to leave you with today. Also, what I want to do before I get started here is thank my partners. I'm standing here in front of you today in San Francisco, but Rachel Dombrowski, who is our assistant director for the Communities Putting Prevention to Work project, Gina Masuda Barnett, who is the director of chronic disease, was the project director, and I can't name all of our other staff at CCDPH, the CPPW, PHIMC, and most importantly, really our residents and our community partners. It really, our experience has been over these last couple of years, it's not just that 1 + 1 = 2, it's 1 + 1 is greater than 2, you know, pick whatever number you want. We really had the fortunate luck of having a great team, and I wouldn't be standing here today and we wouldn't have the story to tell if it weren't for those people. So I don't take that lightly. And again, so what I want to cover with you today is first a little bit about how we created the vision that came before this grant that we executed, and then the framework and the strategy we used to execute it. And one of my favorite quotes and one we use throughout this process is the one that I have here posted for you today, which is that vision without action is merely a dream. Action without vision just passes the time. Vision with action can change the world. And we no longer in public health can afford to take our time either focusing on just the vision part, and in public health we're notorious for collecting a lot of great data and even possibly looking at a lot of good evaluation, but the action part is something that we could probably improve upon. I've been hearing that over and over in this APHA conference. And it's the two together that this story is about. It's marrying the vision with the action. So I'm hoping to tell you a little bit about how we came to the vision and then how we were put into sort of a, I'm going to use the word crisis only because the grant mandates were such that we had to move quickly. So that's really the story I want to tell. So let me tell you a little bit about the situation. And I think most of us are familiar in public health. I don't need to tell everybody about the rising rates of chronic disease and morbidity and mortality, the fact that we don't get a whole lot of money dedicated toward prevention, and that there's no magic bullet. These are complex health issues. There's not an immunization or a pill that we can take, and they take decades, really decades, to show improvement. The part about, so that's complex onto itself that we've been struggling with. But to add to that, here I have the jurisdiction of the Cook County Department of Public Health. Many of you have probably heard of the Chicago Department of Public Health. Well, within the county of Cook, there are actually 6 health departments. And so this is a picture of the map. You can see the city, which is in white, which is the Chicago jurisdiction. And as my quick little bio there just alluded to, the suburban area, which is our jurisdiction, is the rest. It's 125 municipalities. There are hundreds of schools, 143 school districts. There's no one sole form of authority, unlike the city of Chicago. Each of these municipalities passes their own laws, regulations, and so forth. And then you layer that on top of 33 townships, which also has its own form of authority. So I was the deputy director of the Cook County Health Department. I've been at the county for almost 10 years. I recently moved over to the University of Illinois at Chicago School of Public Health, but I know the jurisdiction very well. So this is a very complex jurisdiction. It's very difficult to do public health when you have a small health department in relative in size. Most of you are thinking, that's a large jurisdiction, it's a large health department. Not really. Right now, there's about 300 staff. The budget is only about $50 million if you exclude this unique grant opportunity that I'm sharing. And more than half of that is grant-based. So we were in a little bit of a predicament in terms of how do you address these complex diseases in such a jurisdiction. And then you add on top of that some demographic shifts that we've all been hearing about from the recent census. And in fact, not true to form in terms of the census, you have an increase of poverty being pushed out into the suburban areas where there are disparate resources. So you have, you can see the city is still pretty highly, has a high poverty rate there, but some of the red dots, orange and yellow going outside, that's a dramatic increase than we've seen in the last decade. And so one in five live in poverty, below the 200% poverty level, enough people to fill up Soldier Field Stadium nine times. So just think of a football field. Not a pretty sight. There's been an increase in racial and ethnic increases. So dealing with issues of health and inequity is also really something that we've had to deal with even more. So the question then remained, how do you organize public health with increasing poverty, increasing minority and disparity, increasing health equity, and such a complex jurisdiction? And so this is something we've grappled with for a long time. So as a result of that, our staff undertook strategic planning a number of years ago. And when I say strategic planning, I won't make it into this beautiful, the whole health department did it all at once, a plan was produced. That did actually happen most recently as CCDPH is applying for accreditation, so I'm not going to suggest that that's not important or that they didn't do it. But I think what's important to note is it's about the strategy development and the thinking and the approach one takes and then infusing that into your culture, into your organization. So it really was about 10 years ago when a group of us started at the county working on trying to address some of these issues. And as a result of talking to the community, various positions we held, I was the director of preparedness at one time. I worked in tobacco control in a number of different units. As a result of the various conversations, I took the deputy position, we were able to then put some of these words on paper with a vision and a mission, and most importantly, really, was these key points around strategy, that we wanted to build infrastructure in the suburban areas, that we were no longer going to be able to provide services only, not to take away the services, but that where we have some of the wealthiest and the poorest in the country, that no longer could we just focus on the poor communities because now there were so many of them, and grant after grant after grant in the poor communities, no infrastructure was built. That wasn't changing the story that was happening in those communities. So instead, we imagined a top-down and a bottom-up and a cross. And that's where you see wanting systems of communication and coordination throughout the various sectors that are in Cook County, so schools, faith, businesses, to start building infrastructure, creating networks, constituency building, again, at the grassroots community level, but also on top. So creating coalitions that were leadership-based across the entire county. And then really, no surprise here, capacity building, providing training and resources that started to infuse these ideas within the local communities, but also with organizations that were already there that didn't know about each other. We had duplication of resources, and we weren't leveraging these resources to benefit the entire county. And so it was all that thinking and the talking and that our staff did across different topical areas that came up with these three. It's really ended up being a theory of change for suburban Cook. So this was all prior to the grant. And I just need to emphasize here, and this was an absolute, very serious matter for us. And again, it's public health no longer can just spend its time thinking, and not that we've ever done that, but I think more than ever we have to be trying to match the vision with the action because of health equity. And as I already just briefly said, we have some of the wealthiest, but some of the poorest in the country, and we often get overlooked because of that. The assumption is because the averages in suburban Cook are so high in terms of sort of what the median and the average salaries are, and education and whatnot, that we're often overlooked in terms of federal funding. It often goes still to the city or rural areas. So these were our strategies. We were fortunate enough then, and there were other grants we applied for and received as well with this strategy in mind. So we didn't go after grant dollars when grants came up just to go after the grant dollars. We started looking for opportunities, and then when we got the opportunity, writing the grant around those strategies. And we, without knowing it, landed right on top of a movement that happened to be about policy systems and environmental change. Actually, our first grant was for $40,000 from NACHO, from ACHIEVE. We had no clue this is the direction. I wouldn't say no, but we had little clue that the direction of the nation in public health was moving in that direction as well. So we were lucky to get awarded $17 million. We chose a fiscal agent, the Public Health Institute, because the county couldn't process the amount of money in 2 years, which is what we had from stimulus dollars. And as I alluded to, it was aimed at broad-based policy and environmental changes to make healthy living easier. Well, this is where the crisis part comes in. And I use this case, it's sort of a case study, an example of this grant, but I really need to emphasize that our approach to the execution phase to this, it didn't matter that this was a grant. It could be some other disease. It could be another complex problem. There are some core, very basic principles that I think public health could really strengthen in its national guidance to help health departments and their partners really marry these two key principles. So here we did have this grant, which is what I'll talk about for this for the remainder of the presentation, CPPW, Communities Putting Prevention to Work. We had 2 years to be able to spend down $17 million. I mean, it really, in public health, and even if you have a fiscal agent, that's like unheard of. Probably not since maybe some of the early grants in the 1940s where the influx of money started to come in, have we ever been faced with this. So we were dealing with programmatic demands. We had to hire more than 20 staff. Again, just think about, even though we had a fiscal agent, there was bureaucracy we had to work on, and right away start executing some of those program plans, developing an action plan with our partners, and then meet administrative demands of the grant. So these legal agreements, as I already alluded to, the hiring, and establishing MOUs, and it was just a lot, all the contracts getting up. And then at the same time, we'd spent all this time developing our partnerships and the strategy, and we didn't want to just say, see ya, we're going to go execute. That defeated the whole purpose of the capacity building, the leadership building, and whatnot. So we were in a bit of a, we'll call it a crisis. This happened in about June of 2010, just on the heels of H1N1. And again, you heard me say I was the director of preparedness. So my colleague, Gina Masuda Barnett, and I, who also was the director of preparedness at one time, knew incident command really well, hence the title of this presentation. So our first thought process was, well, this incident command system, which I'll cover in a minute here, is an appropriate organizational model that really forces roles and responsibilities, clear positions, reporting structure, decision making, and it may help us sort of think about how we better communicate with everybody and be clear about what needs to get done by when. So that was the situation we were in. Not to mention the 125 municipalities and the other disparities I discussed. So we also had done a lot of team building over the past 10 previous years, hired much of the staff at that point in our unit. And so we had done some work on values. And not values that you kind of put on the wall and you forget about and you just see in those posters. These were values that matched in the strength of our thinking, the strategies that I covered. These were things that we really tried to instill on a regular, almost daily basis. That drive health equity, that decisions we make or made would be about health equity, to build and support constituency. So collaboration and buy-in from our key actors is vital. We were not going to lose our partnerships. Partnerships are really what I don't want to say all the health department has, but at the end of the day, we don't have the primary resources, they do. So we were not, that was a non-negotiable for us in terms of making sure they were on board and involved. That we would promote the strategy that we worked on and that was bought into from the community and strategic thinking, so that as we went along the project, we needed these opportunities to promote innovation. If something came up that we wanted to tap into, that we were able to do so. We had some space to do it, and I'll explain how I did that. We did that in a minute. And that we did have this alignment with we had a strategic agenda, and we wanted to make sure our actions were in line with that. That we would build capacity, that but it's not just the staff, our leadership, but the community leadership was all about building their capacity so that when the grant was over, we could be sustainable, sticking back to the building capacity as one of our strategies. And, of course, be accountable and measure success. I mean, being excellent in what we do was important. So I say all this, and I thanked, you know, I thanked our staff in the beginning of this presentation, but if we didn't have these values and this committed staff and the discipline that it's required to bring these two things together, this wouldn't have worked. So it's really strong commitment on part of the leadership to constantly be reiterating these values and the strategies in different ways. So here are some of the key principles that we use to then execute. And preparedness was a core principle because of what we had just been through with H1N1. And emergency preparedness does allow for, it's really an excellent framework for management. So that was what we were most recently kind of in tune to. But other things that were important to note that came from my background as well as Gina's and Rachel, who walked in, is in the back now, we were all trained and had a value system of community development and engagement, hence the organizing and community building. We had a background in training. I have a DRPH in leadership, which was about public administration and policy or strategic management. So all of those things were framing our thinking. And then organizational development or group process skills. We all have very, I think, strong facilitation, decision-making, various tools that we have picked up along the way to really make some of these things stick. So it's not just the one framework or the strategy. It's all of these other skills that we have that come together. So in other words, if you're looking for sort of the buzzword to walk out of the room with, if this is really in public, what public administration would call strategic management, it's having good strategy and then matching it with a clear organizational structure, being clear about who's doing what. This is stuff we hear all the time, but we don't really do. That we facilitate information sharing, knowledge transfer, and communication. One of the problems we were having is the partners kept saying, well, we don't know what's really going on, and the staff didn't know what was going on. Things were changing on a daily basis, so communication is huge. To keep accountable, develop and keep accountable to a solid performance measure, not only for the CDC, but our partners in the communities needed to know what was going on, and then to support common cultural values among all. So that is a clear definition of strategic management, but is a few pieces of framework. So if you're going to walk out of here, I don't want you walking out thinking emergency preparedness so much as I do strategic management. It did so happen that preparedness sort of drove our initial decision-making because this really was sort of almost a crisis moment for us. So I'm going to now give you a couple of examples of how this works so you can have a little bit more of some detail and some tangibles. I'm not sure everyone here is familiar with incident command, so just one brief, quick structure, a picture here. So incident command actually goes back farther than the 1970s in the fire service. It has a history farther than that. But in short, imagine three different fires occurring in three different locations, but they're experiencing the same problems and need the same resources, and they can't talk to one another. So the fire service tapped into some military principles and developed incident command and have been using it ever since with great success. Public health, of course, came onto this after 9/11 and many of us have been required to be trained. We've actually used it in a number of different circumstances and found it to be pretty effective. But at the end of the day, these are management principles that it really professes, that you have clear positions, you have chain of command, you have roles and responsibilities that are defined, you know who's in charge, and believe it or not, incident command even asks for a planning team that talks about strategy. And so that was something we didn't forget, and I'll show you in a minute. This is our application. And you don't need to read the tiny boxes other than to see that the framework is very similar. So we developed kind of a finance box in terms of with a grant that all of those people had a structure onto itself just to deal with finance. Capacity building, being one corner store of the grant, had its own chain. The community action plan, which Rachel was actually in charge of, our assistant director, that had its own kind of flow and report chart. And what I want to point out is and you'll see sort of then the meeting structure and communication structure in a minute, but the work all is getting done, and at the top you'll see the second box down, CCDPH or CPPW, strategy project management team. So we had a team designated just to deal with strategy, not to get into the weeds necessarily of what was happening on the day-to-day, but sort of the big picture thinking of how the grant was being executed. And we met, it depended, I mean it was regularly on a bi-weekly basis, often it was weekly and it was ad hoc as well, but we had a special space for that. And you'll note there were operating principles that were the same as our strategies. And so everybody was trained, at least somewhat on these core principles, so they knew how they were operating or knew sort of what the mindset was. So the strategic management or emergency preparedness also, in addition to having a clear organizational chart, roles and responsibilities, decision-making, clear decision-making, also calls for effective meetings and effective meeting structures. So this is going to look a little scary, I think, to some people in terms of the number of meetings. But if you use meetings effectively, this number of meetings actually can work very well for information versus decision-making. So that was one of the things we had to make sure we were clear about. Are we just sharing information so the staff know what's going on and they can go out into the field and execute? Or are we there to make a decision? So that was a key thing we had to distinguish. So the thing I wanted to hone in on here was, again, the strategy piece, because it's, what literature will say and what practice will say is if you keep operational decisions and strategic decisions together in the same meeting, 9 times out of 10, strategy drops. And so if you're trying to sustain your effort, if you're trying to maintain health equity as a value, push your strategies, you might miss innovative opportunity, you might miss that chance to do something that you otherwise couldn't do. So we separated them in that box that I showed you at the leadership level where we just talked about strategic issues. Those, as I already alluded to, were biweekly. But each of those other boxes or on branches had their own meeting structures and information would flow up and down. The thing to note with the effective meeting principles, I see it all too often, I have to underscore it here. Notes have to be taken, action items have to be identified, and a person has to be responsible. And I don't say this lightly, we've heard it over and over, but really I see all too often, we just meet, we don't really know why we're meeting, decisions are made and then nothing happens. That just wasn't possible here. We had to be very clear about who was doing what. Patrick Lencioni, I mentioned here, if you Google the table group, Patrick Lencioni is an organizational behavior and development expert, and so he has a whole approach to doing meeting method approach that I highly recommend that we used. Communication and training for communications. Each of those meetings, obviously information either was shared or decisions were made. But communication was explicitly pushed out as well with our various partners and staff. So there were meetings that happened, check-ins that occurred, but there were also, on a regular basis, emails that would come. Rachel would, at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, would send emails to the entire staff that said, here's what happened this week. So if someone missed the story from the West and someone else, from the South didn't hear what happened in the North, she would spell that out in an email. We also sent emails to our subcontractors on a biweekly basis. Nothing fancy, just emails. This is what's going on. So people felt like they were engaged and in the loop, and they told us they did. So there were a couple others there, too, that we made sure people knew. We tried to make sure people knew what was going on. Training, I mentioned the leadership development, and so we spent an extensive amount of time training our staff so they had the skills, but also providing training to the grantees and to the subcontractors, and I'm happy to explain that more at another time, but just know that that was something that we valued and made sure was instilled. And performance measurement. We have been dealing with performance measurement at the health department for a long time. It was one of my areas of interest in my doctoral program. And of course with the CDC, you're required to, be reporting what you're doing on a regular basis. But because of our past experience with grants and with academia, we already were familiar with concepts of performance measurement. So we instilled Insight Vision, is a particular software tool that allowed us to, and CDC didn't provide this, we undertook this ourselves, from the thinking that we got from another national grant that would score you on a red, yellow, green basis, depending on how your performance was going. We adopted that with our various performance measures from the grant. So this is just a quick picture of that. Again, I'm happy to talk more in detail of what that looked like, so that the grantees would know where they were at and where we were at any particular time. So you can kind of see the green there, and then the change in direction, has it improved or not improved. And it's a quick one-stop shop, so that's something on a regular basis we can look into. So what were our successes? Project Impact, there were nearly half of the municipalities, about 71, received or were impacted by our grant opportunities and our projects, and about the same amount of schools, half of the amount of schools also benefited from this project. And so here's to say that framework and our diligence and the discipline in marrying the vision and action, the project did what it was supposed to do. We, you know, in a project management sense, never scored poorly with CDC. CDC didn't have really sort of a formal rubric, but we never scored poorly with them. And the one thing two things I'll quickly highlight for sustainability, we were able to, because of the strategic thinking and wanting to be sustainable, we were able to transfer some of the PBW initiatives to partners. So Rethink Your Drink was our soda prevention, if you will, campaign to social marketing to redirect folks to not drink soda or sugary drinks. This was picked up by one of our grantees, the Illinois Public Health Institute, who's now branded their obesity prevention work as Rethink Your Drink. So that's one example of sustainability and this conversation that occurred. Another very quick one is that we were able to expand this school leadership concept. I had talked about the networks that would support around and across the jurisdiction since it's so large and so vast. So we have now formed an advisory board committee of the schools, and so that's a major development. They also were trained on leadership principles and in PSC, or Policy Systems Environmental Change. So that is living well past the grant. Just a few challenges here, nothing terribly surprising, I think, but one of the things I would say that was really hard was the values in the project vision were still not understood by all. And so every time we went to go make a decision or, you know, explain our story, this stuff is really, really hard. And we, no matter how hard we tried to talk about what we were trying to do, it's all planning. I mean, to other people, it's all planning. And so it became difficult, I think, to move as fast as we needed to move. And slower than ideal decision making. You know, we had a fiscal agent. We still had a lot of bureaucracy to move through. So I'm not sure we could have prevented that, although lessons learned would be to be very clear about the approval process going forward. And I'll leave here quickly to give my colleagues some good opportunity to speak as well so we can get to some discussion. I think the thing I'd hone in for future considerations after telling you this story is right now my mantra is about the, as you heard me say a couple times now, marrying the vision with the action, but it's the action part. Many of our national frameworks for strategic planning or community health assessment or community health improvement planning spend very less time than ideal, I would say, on execution and how you actually do it. This grant opportunity, I don't think is going to be the first or the last. I think money is going to be continued through ACA, may funnel down with these short windows, these short time frames. It's not new to public health. I just think it's going to be, we're going to see it more and more. Issues are going to be, I've been hearing from the field too, increasingly of this crisis nature, and they don't have to be preparedness. And bottom line, in order to do good work, we need to execute. So I think that in terms of a national commentary, really expanding the models, the methods, training on and evaluation of project execution in public health is vital. So I'll leave you with that note and this final picture of some of our projects that resulted from communities putting prevention to work. So thank you and enjoy the rest of the presentation.